Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chains nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, which according to the Prime Minister is good for the economy, because now everybody can get a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb or one of the curly energy savers if you're just really environmentally conscious and love mercury that much. And my very special guest is Janet Clare, coming at us from an undisclosed South American location. Janet, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. And thank you so much for using my middle name. It's people rarely do. It's actually Janet Clare Phelan, which is what most of my articles appear under, Janet Phelan.
My bad.
But I have my Skype under Janet Clare. It mitigates a little bit of the spam coming in via Skype. You know how that goes. So, it is a beautiful sunny day here in Chiapas. It's the rainy season, which means that it's usually sunny in the morning and then just rains like nobody's business all afternoon and evening long. But we have a little break going right now, and it's actually the afternoon and it's sunny.
Wow, isn't that lovely?
Well, it is for us. You know, we get fairly wet here. So, but I love it. I'm not complaining. I love it.
Righto. Now, speaking of other things you love, the subject of bioweapons. This is what we're here to talk about today. It's quite a serious topic, of course.
Well, so. it certainly is. And with all the attention that 9/11 has been given, and the subsequent stripping of our rights, the massive surveillance monster that we're now all living under, you know, I think that not quite enough attention has been given to the anthrax attacks, which happened right after, the week after 9/11, and there's a thread going on concerning these anthrax attacks and what happened as a result.
Hold on. Are we talking about the same anthrax attacks that were all traced back to U.S. bioweapons research labs like in Fort Detrick and whatnot?
Well, that's a good question, whether it traces back there or not. The FBI certainly wants us to believe, once again, the lone nut theory that Dr. Bruce Ivins simply went off his rocker and did this all alone. But the evidence does not support that.
Is that called a crazy Ivan?
Well, now, unfortunately, a dead Ivan, you know, and there's also the issue about his quote-unquote suicide, but, you know, how convenient that the target, you know, conveniently expired you know, right before he could even ever have his day in court or his, you know, his own testimony heard.
And yeah, so, why is it? What is
closed.
It about?
Case closed. Yeah, sorry.
What is it about going up against the government in court that makes people want to kill themselves en masse? I don't get it. I mean, well, actually, I kind of do get it because, you know, imagine facing them government stooges in court, you know. It's like, I think death is preferable. No, I don't think so. He got suicided.
Well, there are interesting details having to do with Bruce Ivan's quote-unquote suicide. For example, he allegedly overdosed on Tylenol, but the police report doesn't have any Tylenol packages or anything found in his house. So did he teleport it in? I mean, how did he get that into his house if there's no containers, number one? There's also a very disturbing detail having to do, apparently, he began to rally in the hospital. And when it became obvious that he was rallying and might very well survive this, he was pulled off life support, thereby ensuring his demise. So, yeah. You know, we have a problem. Houston, we have a problem here.
Maybe he crushed up some of the bathroom floor and used that as Tylenol.
You know, the problem is, Vinny, that we're living in a holographic, media-enabled delusion. So, that you know, the media will trot itself out and, you know, well, the government says this, so this is the way it is, you know, and pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. So it is very heartening that more and more people are peeking behind that curtain. And I believe that these anthrax attacks of September 2001 point directly towards another event on a, you know, possibly significant scale. And I think, you know, I'm not here to fearmonger. I'm here, hopefully, to give people some information that may, you know, eventually help protect them.
Are you sure you don't want to fearmonger just a little bit? You know, I mean, and here's the other thing that I was wondering about fearmongering. If you're telling the truth, and it's really, really scary and makes people afraid, is that fearmongering or is that just telling the truth? Because I think fearmongering is just when you're making stuff up in order to make people afraid.
Well, fearmongering is another one of those phrases like conspiracy theory. It has been put together to kind of taint, you know, the person who might be actually pointing behind the curtain or saying the emperor has no clothes. So these are terms that are used to sort of, I think, kind of besmirch people who are actually, number one, getting on to what's really going on and then, you know, trying to warn other people. Personally, I'll tell you, I think there's only one thing to be afraid of, and this is my own perspective, and that's doing the wrong thing. You know, I think that we all have, you know, whether we look at ourselves as, you know, whether we affiliate religiously, whether we just simply know that we have a conscience, that we're all somehow connected and we're all in this together, you know, no matter how you look at it, I think that that betrayal and putting oneself and one's own selfish interests above, you know, the interests of your neighbor is not a good thing. And I think that this is what we really have to be afraid of. Oh, there I am. There I am up on your screen.
Yeah. Oh, I've gotten a suggestion from one of my listeners that during the broadcast, the thing that they really hate most is watching my frickin' bobbing head the whole time. You know, and that I should put the guest up on the gargantuan screen behind me. So, you know, I'm just trialing it out. I put up Suzanne Posel's one up on the screen behind me the other day, and it was like this giant, all-seeing Suzanne Posel, you know, like Sauron behind me, and it kind of freaked a few of the listeners out.
The all-seeing eye of Suzanne Posel?
The all-seeing Posel. It was classic. Okay, well, anyway, we're getting off topic, aren't we? Speaking of fear-mongering, and I wanted to bring in the New Zealand perspective on this just briefly. The Prime Minister, John Key, right, former Federal Reserve banker, I'm sure you know, he comes out the other day amidst huge, huge opposition to his new GCSB bill, which is basically Patriot Act on steroids, whatever. And he says, you know what, we really need this bill, after everybody says that they don't want it, after this poll's on TV, 80% of respondents saying we don't want it. We really need this new GCSB bill. Well, why is that, John? Because there's Al-Qaeda in New Zealand. Yeah, that's what's going on. Really? Which ones? And you're like, oh, I can't reveal that information. Have you got any evidence of your allegation? No, I can't reveal that information. Have you got any possible suspect? No, I can't reveal that information. Are there any names, dates, places, numbers, any freaking thing that you can point to assure us that you're not just a lying piece of trash who's fear-mongering in order to get your draconian BS pass? No, sorry, you're just going to have to trust me based upon the thousands of lies that I've already told per day as the Prime Minister of this country. Just trust me this time. Because at this time I'm telling the truth. I swear I am.
This is so sad. Trust me. I think those are two of the most alarming words when they come out of the mouth of a politician. Trust me.
And the other alarming words are, we're from the government and we're here to help you.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
I'm sure they announced that in Boston when they invaded the streets with freaking armored troop carriers to get two guys who were surrendering.
Yeah.
You can't make this stuff up, but it's actually quite sad, isn't it?
Well, you know, I have this little phrase I'm sort of tossing around in my head. Remember how during, well, you were too young, but during the Vietnam War, there was the slogan, what if they gave a war and nobody came? Well, you know, as a United States citizen who will no longer wants to live in her country, I'm trying this one out. What if they gave a country and everybody left?
So. Well, people are leaving the United States like rats leaving a sinking ship at the moment. It's reminiscent of what happened in the Third Reich towards the beginning of World War II. They had like virtually a mass exodus of Germans who didn't want to live in a tyranny, who didn't want to have all their freedoms taken off them. And nowadays, it's the United States being the one to experience this. And it's really quite sad, you know. I mean, I've not lived in the United States. I'm not an American. But even so, I see the idea of what America should have been, and I see it besmirched by a bunch of scumbaggery agents of the New World Order, and it's just really sick because there's so many freaking good people in that country.
Well, the times they are changing, Vinny. Times they are changing.
For the worse or the better. I think that actually things are getting better and worse at the same time, Janet, you know what I mean?
I agree. Yeah, I agree. There are more and more people who are, you know, who are popping up and doing the kinds of things that you're doing, you know, and really using that bullhorn to kind of let people know, you know, that things, Houston, we have a problem. So, you know, in that respect, I think things are certainly looking up. And along with this, we have more and more oppression going on, unfortunately, worldwide. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So,
bioweapons is the topic. We're getting off topic here.
Well, you know, it's all of a cloth. It's all part of the fabric of the world in which we're living now. So it's all, you know, really deserving of discussion. So bioweapons.
I think that dealing with it with humor is the fabric softener.
Ah, right. Well, what is it they say? If you weren't laughing, you'd be crying. So, well, I think that dealing with it with humor is, you know, is a way it's another way, basically, to basically express concerns. And there are many ways to express concerns, and I like your way.
Yeah, I was with one of my listeners, Vincent, incidentally, yesterday. It was like V1 and V2, you know? Are you thinking what I'm thinking, V1? Shoot, I hope not V2. And he was asking me, you know, why don't you cover things like a little bit more seriously, Vinny? And I was just going, okay, can you name me one other show that deals with these issues with comedy? No? Okay, can you name me one other show that deals with these issues really seriously and doesn't let up about it? He says, well, all of them. I say, exactly. So when you tell me to cover these things more seriously, what you're telling me is, Vinny, why can't you be like everybody else?
No.
Those are very tainted words. I mean, anybody who has any level of self-respect and hears that being said about them, why don't you just be like everybody else, you know? Yeah.
Well, the thing is, I explained to him what the point of the show is. The point of the show isn't to necessarily wake people up per se, okay? The people who listen to the show are already awake. The point of fact is, this information is infuriating and it can drive you insane. It literally can. There are a lot of people who get driven literally insane from hearing this kind of information day in, day out, with no reprieve, with no let up. My objective is to keep those people who are already awake sane so that they don't slip into some kind of insane stupor, okay? That's the whole thing. I'm just here to relieve the tension. The information, just an added extra.
Ah, Vinny's was antidote to the rubber room.
Lose your sense of humor, you'll go friggin' nuts.
That is true.
Okay. Bioweapons. In fact, we've only got like 30 seconds until the end of this segment, Janet. So how about you give us a quick teaser and then we're going to go to break and then we'll come back and we'll launch right into it like a cruise missile.
Right. Bioweapons. You want me to give you a 30-second teaser and you're giving me no time whatsoever to think over what to say.
It's now a 15-second teaser.
I don't appreciate that, Vinny. No, we're going
it's
to
It's now a 10-second teaser.
When you get back from break, you will hear the most shocking, pornographic, lascivious, lewd. Does that work?
Yeah. Lascivious and lewd with Janet Phelan. We'll be right back. Wait, who is it? A lewd Phelan. That's what we're talking about. Back in a minute, ladies and gentlemen, at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Don't you go anywhere, and don't you go friggin' nuts.
Please don't desert me. Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky.
Welcome back. Black sunrise. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Janet Phelan. And do you have a website there, Janet?
Yes, I do. It's janetphelan.com.
All right. And you were the inspiration article. Your inspiration mm-hmm. behind the song, Oh, What a Feeling. Da, 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 da. Okay.
You know, when I was in junior high, I'd walk into geometry class and they go, here's the girl who's Phelan, you know. So you can make all kinds of jokes with my name. I don't mind.
You're getting used to it after a while, eh? The problem is nobody knows how to make jokes about the name Vinny Eastwood. You know, like maybe this. I mean, the common one is like, "Oh, are you related to Clint Eastwood?" Which isn't really a joke. Nobody can really come up with a joke based on this name. It's ironic because I can make jokes out of pretty much anything. All right, I'm sorry. Let's get back to the issue at hand. The right. Lewd Phelan. We're talking about bioweapons.
Lewd, lascivious, and pornographic bioweapons. We can forget about the adjectives and just focus on the bioweapons for the time being. So bioweapons have been specifically allegations of the United States violations of biological weapons laws have been back in the news lately. A couple of months ago, a colonel in China accused the United States of deliberately planting a bioweapon in his country, which resulted in that H7N9 avian flu epidemic, which killed over 35 people. Actually, very scary mortality rate with this strain. Over 30% of the people who are infected with it apparently die. This colonel, highly placed colonel in the Chinese army, made quite a bit of flurry in the news because he accused the U.S. of doing this to his country. And then just last week, there was an accusation that came from a highly placed minister in Russia saying that the U.S. was basically conspiring with Georgia in terms of this bioweapons lab that the U.S. and Georgia has sort of cooked up right across the border from Russia. And actually just, I believe yesterday, there was some movement on this issue where the U.S. is now signing off of its partnership with Georgia with this lab, saying, no, we're not going to do anything to you. See, we're going away now. So this issue is beginning to engage nations now and their own, national security concerns about the behavior of the United States. But my concerns, my specific concerns about the United States and its biological weapons agenda points to a very possible engineering of a pandemic, which would, whether or not it will affect China and Russia is a question mark, but would certainly affect people residing within the borders of the United States. And that is a concern that has been, there are indicators that this concern is valid. So if we start with the anthrax attacks of 2001 and sort of start tracing the thread from there onward, we find some rather alarming indicators. As a result of the anthrax attacks, the U.S. Launched a huge bio, quote-unquote, biodefense program. Since September of 2001, the United States government has pumped over $70 billion into this, quote-unquote, biodefense program. Now, the reason I keep saying quote-unquote is for a number of reasons. First of all, biodefense is, as any college-level science student would know, is really a blade that cuts both ways, because in order to develop a countermeasure, a treatment for a biological weapon, you've got to have the biological weapon, okay? So every statement about biodefense implicit within this, in the background, is the existence of that weapon that they are allegedly testing the countermeasure against. Now, interestingly enough, since the anthrax mailings of 2001, with all this $70 billion pumped into biodefense, we have yet to develop a second-generation anthrax vaccine. The first anthrax vaccine is reputed to have caused Gulf War syndrome. So $70 billion later, we can't come up with a second-generation vaccine. That in itself raises some questions.
Well, personally, if they don't come up with a vaccine, I think that's a victory. Because vaccines are very evil indeed. And as far as I know, have no benefit or safety or effectiveness.
There's a lot of problems associated with vaccines. Right. So one has to ask, well, what are you doing with that $70 billion, huh? Well, what the U.S. is doing, among other things, is that they're funding all these what they call biosecurity labs. The BSLs, biosecurity labs, biosafety labs, they are graded from like level 1 to level 4, with the most, shall we say, radioactive labs being at the higher end of the numerical spectrum. For example, level 4 labs are where they're dealing with substances where there's no known cure. So if there's a leak or, if there's something happens, then you can't do anything about it. So the containment security measures at these level four labs are supposed to be the most extreme. Level three labs,
they have like self-destruct and fire purge protocols and things like that in those kind of labs, don't they?
Well, they're supposed to have all kinds of protocols, but you know, if you start looking at the number of quote unquote accidents and leaks, I mean, it's very scary because there's all kinds of leaks going on in labs.
What was her name? Jane Burgermeister indeed reported a this thing. I think there's something like 56 different checks that that go out with a vaccine out of a level four lab, and one of these labs produced the swine flu vaccine a number of years ago, and I think it might have been in the Czech Republic that they tested it on. Stoats or weasels or something, and they all died. And they found out that it was purposely contaminated. Okay, so 56 security checks, and they all simultaneously failed? I don't freaking think so. They were trying to get a contaminated vaccine out there so that they could cause a pandemic for which they could sell their own vaccines back to them.
Well, you know, yeah. Just yesterday, a story broke in Whiteout Press that the CDC had hastily taken off its website an apologia for creating a polio vaccine that was contaminated with cancer. So it went up on the CDC website and then suddenly disappeared. So, gee, polio vaccine contaminated with cancer. So, wow. I mean, that's...
Most people don't even know that cancer is a virus. And that the very reason why almost everybody's getting cancer nowadays is because all the vaccines are contaminated with cancer viruses. And this one actually managed to report that it did have a cancer virus in one of its vaccines and then pulls it down, of course.
Yeah, well, the CDC has not been exactly forthcoming. For example, I was just talking about these BSLs. They're BSL-3s and 4s are the ones that I've been focusing on most because those are where they have the most problematic sorts of testing going on. And the CDC has consistently put out false and misleading information as to even the numbers of BSL-3s and 4s in the country. It was about a year ago where I was interfacing with the CDC about this. And they're saying, oh, well, you know, we don't have any more labs than we had before September 11th. I mean, we've got 250 BSL-3s, and actually there's a Department of Energy document that lists over 1,300 BSL-3s, not 250, like the CDC says, over 1,300. Somebody can't add over there, Vinny. And then you look at the BSL-4s, which are the really high containment labs, and you've got similar sorts of nonsense spewing from the CDC about this. You can find these labs. You can do your own research and find them. And then when you confront the CDC, they go, oh, you mean you found a lab? And, well, there might be a lab there. Got to go now. You know, I mean, it's like complete nonsense.
Janet, I would say that it's not that they can't add. It's that they're very good at subtraction.
Very good. Very, very good. So we have, you know, CDC lies. We have a proliferation of labs. We have research where nobody's minding the story. And this was very well exposed by the now defunct Sunshine Project, which was really dedicated to providing some level of sunlight into what was going on with these bioweapons labs biodefense labs. How silly of me. How could I call them bioweapons labs?
And it must have been a Freudian slip.
Maybe it was, something like that. So the Sunshine Project, you know, has really done a very good job in, looking at certain parameters. You know, what sorts of oversight mechanisms are there? Oh, well, you know, these labs are supposed to make these certain kinds of reports. And then the Sunshine Project goes in and looks and says, gee, they're not making the reports. And then the Sunshine Project went in and found out that, you know, that let's say a certain project was supposed to be researching, you know, any of these things, Marburg. and they find out that they're doing completely unauthorized research, you know, that has nothing to do with the stated sort of a project that's supposed to be going on. So at one point, the Sunshine Project, unfortunately, stopped doing this wonderful job in terms of providing some real grit in terms of our understanding of what's happening. I really wish that they were back in business. I wonder why they're not. But so, you know, we have a big question mark going on as to the activities going on in these labs. Now, there's another indicator which is even, I think, more disturbing than, you know, than what we were just discussing, and this is the change in our biological weapons legislation following the attacks of September 11th. So, as you know, Vinny, the U.S. Congress rushed to pass the USA Patriot Act, fought this huge, monstrous piece of legislation, which has really altered our entire constitutional framework. I mean, now we have these. Yeah, go ahead.
I believe I actually spoke to somebody who used to work for the Nixon administration, I think, that saw the Patriot Act on Nixon's desk. Like, it's been in the works for a long time, and they're just waiting for the right crisis. You just be like,
you know, I hope that we can maybe nuke our own citizens, or maybe somebody will be stupid enough to attack us or something like that. And that way we can pass this legislation that we've been sitting on for like 30, 40 years, you know?
Oh, well, I am not a crook. I am not a crook.
I love that. I love that. You know, it's people call us a conspiracy theorist in order to discredit us. And it was actually Richard Milhouse Nixon who called Woodward and Bernstein conspiracy theorists.
They're just conspiracy theorists. I am not a crook.
And then later he was exposed as being part of a conspiracy and a crook.
Well, you know, this is American history. This is the history of America, really, just really playing itself out. Right. So this piece of legislation, the USA Patriot Act, has had ramifications on many, many different levels in terms of you know, our spying on U.S. citizens, in terms of basically removing many of our options to petition for redress against government intrusion. And they snuck something into the USA Patriot Act about biological weapons. It's called the Expansion of the Biological Weapons Statute. It's Section 817. Tattoo that on your forehead. Section 817 of the U.S. Patriot Act.
Did you know, in the military, if you get a Section 8, it means you're insane.
Ah, well, this is, well, Section 8 insurance. Okay, well, we have an 817, which basically I think means your dad. So let me just say what it says in this 817. It goes into, you know, they amended a little bit of this and that and so forth. And then it says, the prohibitions contained in this section shall not apply to any duly authorized United States governmental activity. So what this means is that all of this top-heavy, you can't do this with bioweapons, you can't have them, you can't transport them, you can't store them, but we can, the U.S. government can.
Yeah, because of course only authority can be trusted, right?
Yeah, we're from the government and we're here to help. Trust me, right? Right. So the question would be, why was it necessary for the U.S. to give itself immunity from violating its own legislation about biological weapons? And not only did we give ourselves immunity, we failed, forgot, neglected to report this to the International Treaty Organization of which we're a signatory.
And we I find it, don't you find it ironic? The U.S. government writes into legislation that they're immune to bioweapons. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com with Janet Phelan, janetphelan.com.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca-Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I can just imagine the postmen, you know, driving around in their big post trucks, USPS or whatever the PS3, whatever the hell the US Postal Service is branded with now. And just, you know, playing some Johnny Cash, you know, I've been everywhere, man. Yeah. Thinking about delivering those anthrax letters. You know, a little bit of theme music. It would never hurt nobody. I mean, delivering anthrax over there, man. And it's a... And we're going to put it into your mountain there, man. All right. Janet Phelan is my very special guest. Where were we?
We were talking about the Biological Weapons Convention, which is another aspect. It's another perspective through which we can look at the U.S.'s iniquity in terms of what it says versus what it does. Biological Weapons Convention, which is an international treaty, came into existence in, well, entered into force in 1975. The U.S. signed the treaty in 1972, right around Richard Nixon, wasn't it? Actually, Richard Nixon, whom you so well characterized earlier in the show, had made a very bold move in the early 70s by unilaterally taking down, stopping, banning our offensive biological weapons program. He said, no more. Okay, we're not going to do this. I am not a crook. Trust me, right? So at that point, shortly thereafter, the Biological Weapons Convention came into effect as an international treaty, and everything was just real hunky-dory from that point on, right? I mean, we're not going to be creating biological weapons. We're not going to be using them, transporting them, stockpiling them, except the Biological Weapons Convention itself is curiously a paper tiger. It is, I believe, the only arms treaty that has no implementation protocol, no way to verify if the signers under the treaty are actually in accordance with the treaty mandate. So it's just a bunch of hot air, okay? Now, some of the nations didn't like that, so they got together, and they, after several years of committee meetings, they put together a verification and implementation protocol, and they presented this to the BWC at large in 2001, about 6 months before September 11th and the anthrax attacks. And this... this effort, which could have put some teeth into the BWC, was completely boycotted by, you want to guess, Vinny? Who was it who said, we're not going to do this?
Rumsfeld or
we can't have any of that. Now, I have a quote here. It was John Bolton was the... Under Secretary of State for Arms Control and International Security.
No relation to Michael Bolton?
Oh, I wish.
I'm sure he's just as terrible a singer.
Well, we might have been safer if he was singing instead of, parading around the world, making the world a dangerous place for all of us.
For democracy.
Yeah, exactly. Making the world safe for democracy. Making the world safe for the types such as John Bolton himself. So, because this national security thing, I mean, it's really about protecting, the elite. I mean, it's not about protecting the nation, unless you want to define the nation as the government itself, not the people.
Janet, my rule of thumb is, if the government says something, assume that it's the direct opposite to its stated intention. 90% of the time, actually more like 99.5% of the time, it'll be precisely what the opposite is.
So I have some little quotes here from John Bolton's speech where he, refused to have anything to do with this tainted verification protocol. I'd like to read it if I could. It's such a good example of newspeak, Orwellian newspeak. So John Bolton said, "Will we be courageous, unflinching, and timely in our actions to develop effective tools to deal with the threat as it exists today, or will we merely defer to slow-moving multilateral mechanisms that are oblivious to what is happening in the real world?" And then he says, "The United States will simply not enter into agreements that allow rogue states or others to develop and deploy biological weapons. We will continue to reject flawed texts like the BWC draft protocol, recommended to us simply because they are the product of lengthy negotiations or arbitrary deadlines. If such texts are not in the best interests of the United States and many other countries represented here today." So you take your verification protocol and put it where the sun don't shine. And as a result of this, we have no verification protocol.
Right. So instead of having oversight, it ensures that everything just gets overlooked.
Well, they did some very interesting things because they had to kind of like, patch up a little bit the, their blatant rejection of this. So now, instead of a real verification protocol, we have something euphemistically called confidence-building measures.
Which is brainwashing people into believing our BS measures.
Exactly. So the countries are supposed to, fill out these CBM forms, the confidence-building measure forms, and submit them to the United Nations for the other countries. The disregard with which these CBMs are held is evidenced by the fact that really very few countries are even bothering to do it. So the confidence building is the United States says, well, this is what we're doing, and if you don't like it, like, too bad, because we're just, we're telling you. And, of course, we're honest and truthful. We are not crooks, and trust us. Now, it got interesting, though, because after this this Section 817 of the U.S. Patriot Act was passed by the U.S. Congress, according to a politically binding agreement, the United States was mandated to report this change in legislation to the BWC, and it didn't. We did not report that we had decided that the U.S. government would have immunity from violating its own legislation, which the biological weapons statute is very close in its wording to this BWC agreement. So basically what the U.S. was doing was giving the bird to the BWC. But they forgot to tell the BWC, hey, we're going to do this whether you like it or not. So I was in Geneva in December of 2011. I went to Geneva for the Biological Weapons Convention. And I actually presented at the Biological Weapons Convention. And my presentation, which is actually on the UN BWC website, you can find it there if you look really hard, was focused on the many different parameters, the many different perspectives. You can look at the U.S.'s behavior and come to the conclusion that they're violating the treaty. And while I was there in Geneva, I started looking at this CBM stuff, and I thought, oh, my gosh, we never informed the treaty organization that we changed our laws. Now, the United States, at this BWC meeting in 2011 in Geneva, Switzerland, held several side events. It was mostly like during lunch, because the treaty, the international delegates were in this huge rotunda for hours and hours every day, talking about all these different issues. But there was opportunities during like lunch and so forth for countries or groups to hold little side events. So the U.S. hosted three side events during the BWC itself, which ran almost 3 weeks. The meeting, the big BWC meeting.
Is this what? in keeping with my rule of thumb, the side events were actually the real events, and the real event was actually the side event.
Well, you know, they were meant to sort of, you know, augment and give different perspectives and so forth. And some of them were very interesting, and some of them were, you know, pure propaganda. So I'm sitting at this little side event that the U.S. is hosting, and they have a panel up there, and they have a gentleman from the Department of Homeland Security named Dr. Daniel Gerstein. And he's doing a little presentation on our great bioweapons, our biosafety legislation, right? And he gets up there.
Do you have a German accent by chance?
You know,
and is it related to Joseph Goebbels?
Good question. I wish I had that question, because I wish I had, because I did ask some questions and apparently got people all upset, because the U.S. team approached me shortly thereafter and said, we've got a problem with the kinds of questions you're asking. But nevertheless, Gerstein puts up on the screen a PowerPoint demonstration showing our great biological weapons statute. Except he put up the old statute. He, quote-unquote, forgot, neglected to put up the revised edition of the expansion of the biological weapons statute, which was passed under the U.S. Patriot Act, and basically amended the biological weapons statute to give the U.S. government immunity. He forgot. So I reminded him. I put up my hand, and he foolishly called on me, and I said, don't you think you could, give us the updated version, Dr. Gerstein? And I went ahead and read it to him, you know, this specific caveat where it says these prohibitions shall not apply. And Gerstein, you know, he got a little nervous, and I had another question, of course, which he, at that point, they didn't want me to ask any more questions. So shortly thereafter, I was approached in the lobby by the U.S. team saying, you know, we'd like to talk to you about your question.
Janet, I'm sorry, we've got to go to break. We'll be right back, folks.